Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I have my co-host.
And good evening to you, Dr. Val, and our audience. What a beautiful day it is. And I'm excited and ready to get started. And if I was going to sing a song, I was going to sing, "Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly." Uh-oh. And that's where we stop, because for many people, this isn't a season of being jolly at all. As a matter of fact, they're watching people around them. They're watching people around them oftentimes look like they're happy, doing things that they like, enjoying gifts and all those things. But inwardly, there are many people that are not enjoying or will not enjoy a season being jolly because of what we just simply call life events and things. And, you know, we've been on a roll with a lot of the subjects that we've been covering. But, you know, I thank you for your insight in thinking about the fact of, you know, hey, there are people that right about now, the closer that it gets to December 25th, the greater hole that they sink in, or they find themselves in a state of depression, or find themselves feeling lost, or find themselves just simply feeling unwanted, unfulfilled. And that's a reality. And I'm just so thankful because of the fact we acknowledge that that reality exists, and we don't take this time to blame no one for that reality. But it is important that with our audience that they understand that this happens, and it happens to people from every walk of life. And it's not a matter of being someone's fault. It's a matter of, you know, what do we do now to address it? How do we even admit that it's there? How do we identify it? And that becomes not only the responsibility of the person who may be suffering, but also from those loved ones, those associates and friends that are around them. So I'm excited about tonight. And isn't that an oxymoron? I'm excited about tonight's show, dealing with holidays and mental illness.
Yes, holidays and mental illness. A lot of people don't understand what mental illness is. Mental illness affects a person's thinking, their feeling, their behavior, or their mood. That's mental illness. And a lot of people have suffered some massive losses in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And here it is, many of theirs first times being without their loved ones.
Absolutely.
Many have experienced breakups. Yeah, many have experienced financial losses. So yes, it will affect your thinking, your feeling, the way you feel about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you think you're a failure, and what's the point of going on? Some people don't understand why it happened and questioning God. There are many believers that are questioning God, saying, "God, how could this happen? You know, I've been faithful, and this is what happened. You've taken my loved one. You've taken my finances. I've lost my home. I lost my job. I lost my car." And it will cause you to have a mental break. But what do you do in situations like that? How does it affect your mood? And, you know, we see people in the stores and they're acting a certain type of way, and we be like, "Oh, that person is crazy." Well, yeah, they have something going on that we can't see what's going on inside. We're just looking at outside. And it does affect everyone. It has no financial barrier that where the fact you can be in poverty or you can be rich, millions of dollars, and still be suffering with mental illness, still be suffering with losses, still be suffering with heartbreak. So how do we shift and move on from this? And how can we identify this and help individuals that are around us? And what should we be looking for?
You know, that's a very important one of the things that people have to be aware of, that although we're talking about mental illness, depression, and those things in the holiday season, but mental illnesses, people come up with mental illnesses for a number of reasons. Part of mental illness is genetic. Part of it is environment. Other is life stressing events in their life, trauma that they have undergone. And all these things are there, and they just don't go away except they are treated. They don't go away without having some.
Some are born with chemical imbalances in their body, that's what you call, the definition for that is called bipolar, or they're schizophrenic. There's different levels of mental illness. So like you said, they can be brought upon by a mental defect, chemical imbalances, and traumas, life traumas.
Yeah. And not only that, things like unhealthy habits, things that they have a proclivity to do a lot. Being in environments that just continue to fuel, if you would, things like unhealthy habits, eating disorders, still part of disorders there. Yes. Not only those things there, but when we start thinking about even a person who begins to, because of their depression or their stress, turn to alcohol or turn to drugs. So there are many things that may contribute to it. And I think what people have to understand is this. It doesn't, the first thing that we can do to help is not to demonize the person who's going through it. That's the first thing that we can do to help. The second thing that we can do to help is to recognize, ask the right questions, you know, what's going on. Don't pass judgment, because passing judgment in any case causes you, me, or anyone to oftentimes shut down. And so when a person might want to say something, they don't say anything, even if they feel that something is not right with them, even if they feel that something is going wrong with them, can they have that conversation? So when we start talking about mental illness, we have to understand that it does affect everything about us. It affects our lives, our livelihood, the way that we go about doing business, the way we go about interacting with one another. Those things there has to be addressed, you know, whether we're talking about what leads to, you know, clinical depression or another type of disorder, it is all there. And we have to recognize that when we're impacted by these things here, the real solution is to get help. And what does help look like? And we have to understand that in today's society, the conversation about mental health is becoming very alive and well. But it's interesting that it really has reached its peak in the midst of these last nearly 20 months of this pandemic. Because in fact, now we could see people collectively going through some of these stressors, these unknowns. You know, we went through the whole height of the pandemic when we was at the stay-at-home order. I mean, parents were getting tired of their children. You know, child abuse cases was going up and escalating, domestic violence escalating. All of these things here, people not being able to deal with emotions, dealing with stress. People realized they didn't like each other anymore. You say, well, is that a mental illness? Definitely what we're seeing manifest here is symptoms that are escalating. What are people doing? People actually isolating themselves from people because they don't want to be around people. And these type of behaviors, these type of patterns, these type of things here, sometimes it's even exacerbated during holiday time because of expectation. Think about it. I laughably did the first stanza of Deck the Halls with Files of Holly, fa la 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 la. But when we talk about tis the season to be jolly, each of us can think of people, even if it was ourselves at one time, that the holidays is a very tough time. And you started off by saying there are many people that are experiencing first right now during the holiday season, their first holiday without their loved one, whether it's a mother, father, sister, brother, a child, a nephew, a niece, first holiday, you know, divorced, you know, first holiday after a breakup, first holiday. I mean, all these firsts leave people feeling very empty because that which was their norm has been interrupted. And so when we start seeing people, with long extended periods of depression, we need to notice that. When people are always sad and very sad and they can't seem to get it back right and everything makes them sad and they're not, those are signs that we need to look at because in fact, this person may be suffering from mental illness. And it's not a subject to become the gossip session. It is, what do we do? What can I do? I mean, what can I do to help this individual? You know, offer my services to those individuals. And it's funny with First Aid Mental Health, we have this acronym that talk about, it's called ABGI. And the first thing is to assess the risk of suicide and harm. Is this person at a place where they will harm themselves? Or would they, you know, hurt themselves or hurt someone else? And that's
important. You know, the myth with that, Dr. J, as you're talking about someone harming themselves is that sometimes you really don't know. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and she was telling me that her closest friend's son hung himself last week, and no one saw it coming. And he's in his 40s, and he just hung himself. And his mother's in pain and grieving because she was like, he must have hated me to do something like this. But the truth of the matter is, when you're in a state of depression and you're going through something, you don't think about the aftermath your actions may cause. You don't think about the hurt you leave behind because you're trying to silence the noise. You're trying to silence the hurt and the pain that you feel. So it is, you know, people say, well, I didn't see that coming. Well, are we really looking for that? Are we knowledgeable of the signs and what it looks like? Because like I said at the top of the show, it affects your thinking. So no, he wasn't thinking about the aftermath or what it may cause to those that actually love them. It affects their feelings, because most people that are depressed feels like nobody loves them, nobody care, but they have people that love them and care, but they have enclosed themselves in a tomb and not allowed any emotions to go in and out, and it affects their behavior. What is their behavior? Shut down, block themselves away from being exposed to individuals for fear they may be found out, that they're not, you know, leading up to someone's expectations. Because at the end of the day, we all want to be acknowledged, we want to be esteemed, we want to be recognized, we want to be seen. But what does that look like to someone who's in a mental state capacity where they're not functioning totally 100%?
You hit the right point there. And it's so interesting when you talk about that friend. What we often do is start blaming ourselves. Maybe we didn't do this enough. Maybe we didn't listen enough. Maybe they didn't feel loved by us. All of those things that we take on. But what we have to also keep in mind inside of this is that, and I think you put it very, very wonderful, is that the individual who gets to that point is not necessarily thinking about tomorrow, not thinking about all those things. So, you know, many times they may have a plan. That plan ends at them taking their own lives. And so we term suicide as being, it's really a permanent solution to a temporary issue, temporary problem. So I make a permanent decision about a temporary situation. And so as a result of that, there are people that are hurt. There are people that are there because at the time of the depression, at the time of being overwhelmed, at the time of feeling as if life isn't worth it, at the time of it, that's one set of it. But then for others, it's a sense of feeling like they're going to escape to something. You know, we've all seen people who are perfectly fine have faults and say, man, I just wish I could just lay down and not wake up.
I've been there.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially going through domestic violence. There were times I was like, oh, if I could just go to sleep and not wake up to this. But then I had my children that kept me going. They kept me centered. They kept me focused. So it is easy for someone to slip into that type of depression of not even wanting to exist in a world that they feel has overwhelmed them to the capacity where they feel they're not worthy to even be here. And my heart goes out to individuals like that. But, you know, it is not over. It is not over. You know, if you could just see yourself in the future and how you're looking, you're probably looking a whole lot better because you'll be a whole lot wiser. So don't rob us of your glory. Don't rob us of your light, your shine, your smile, you know, because those things that you feel are inadequate or adequate and sufficient for someone that is in your space that admires you. You know, some people are admired and they don't know how much a person really admires them or cares about them. And the fact that they're able to hold it together, even in the midst of adversity, they're still standing. And although their light is dimming, they're still standing. So don't rob us of that. Don't rob us of the future glory and greatness that you will share upon us.
And exactly right, because the fact there are times that people don't, when a person reaches, say, a stage of hopelessness, that's exactly what it is, that there is no hope. I don't see any hope in my situation. And yet it's still from the outside looking in. There are people who might see you as being resilient, as being strong, recognize that, wow, he's gone through a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And he's still standing. Man, she's gone through that, but they continue to bounce back. And that's the outside conversation. Your internal conversation is saying to you, I'm tired of failing. I'm tired of going through this. I'm tired of, watch this, feeling judged. Now, we didn't say that you were being judged, because our self-talk is so much. And so self-talk has a whole lot to do with people who are going through mental illness and mental depression as well. Because the fact, it's not really the outside voices that necessarily causes a person to go into those type of depression. It is the inside voice.
That boogeyman inside.
Mm-hmm. That boogeyman that continues to rehearse things. That boogeyman that continues to talk about what you don't have, or what you lost, or what was done to you, or what you did not achieve. And see, here's another Christmas, another holiday, and you don't have nobody, you know, all the time. Nobody wants you. Look at you. Everybody got somebody but you. And that is a rehearsed conversation.
Yeah, I hate that song, What the Will the Lonely Do at Christmas. I hate it when that song came on.
Because it feeds that type of emotion.
Yes, it does. Like, what will the lonely do? And I mean, and you just like, oh, yeah, I'm by myself again. I guess me and my kids, I guess I have to glory. But so it's like you say, the world feeds into your psyche and causes you to react a certain way. And especially during the holidays, you know, men are under extreme amount of pressure. You being a man, I'm sure, right, as a father, and finances weren't coming in, and wanting to be that hero for your children. So maybe you can speak on that and enlighten some of the guys of the things that you did in order to stand.
Well, it's interesting, because it is a journey. And what I recognize about myself over the years is that the older that my kids got, I really feel like some of that weight kind of lifted, because now as adults, listen, it's almost like saying, no, you know, we're not playing that game. You know that I love you. My expression of love to you is year long inside of that. And so as men, I think we cannot allow ourselves to be defined and our self-worth defined by a holiday. I refuse to allow one day to define who I am these other 364 days of the year. So if I'm suffering financially, why do I need to put myself in this depression, in this hole, simply because of the fact I'm trying to meet an expectation of a particular day, of a particular day? And so as men, we have to understand that if we work on being our best and doing what we can throughout the year, then this pressure I got to measure up on this particular day does not have the same weight, and it shouldn't have the same weight. By the same token, being men that want to be responsible, that want to bring joy, we have to begin to understand something. We have to become thrifty. Yes, it's all right to become thrifty. It might not be cool, but you know what? If I'm going to have goals, I need to become thrifty at what I do inside of it. And if you're going to judge me based upon the fact that what you received was not what you wanted, then you have to ask yourself the question, do any of us always get what we want? Mm. Do any of us always get what we are deserving of? But do we allow that to make us feel any less of a person? So, you know, for me, Dr. Val, it's a little different. I say this in Gary Smalley's book about the five love languages. And he talks about those and he goes all the way from the fact of words of affirmation. He goes all the way to talk about, you know, words of affirmation. He talks about physical touch. He talks about acts of service. He talks about quality time. He talks about giving and receiving of gifts. Right. So for me, far as my love language, the receiving of gifts is actually number four, number five. I'm more of a giver of gifts than I am a receiver of gifts. So my measure of who I am is not necessarily quality, you know, what you think of me. Well, you got me a pair of socks with my initials embroidered on it. You know, wow, right. Thank you. No, I'm just as happy about that because the gift doesn't define me. But by the same token, I have to hold that in also in respect to the fact that I'm not going to be defined by what gift I give you neither. Because to me, the gift of time, the gift of affirmation, the gift of love and compassion that is consistent and constant to me is definitely more valuable than perhaps the end of the year things are tough. Perhaps the end of the year things are real tight. Perhaps that's the case there. And one of the greatest things that I ever remember when raising my kids, and I never will forget this, and it blessed my heart, and I still have this to this day, was notes that my kids, especially the younger three, wrote me, balled it up, put it on paper for Christmas. Those notes there was worth anything and everything to me. And I think that we have to learn to embrace those same things. But once again, what are we still talking about? Fault. What is it that we nurture? Some people think when they don't get what they want, it's a sign of rejection.
Right.
Or they didn't think nothing of me. Well, I see what I meant to you. No, that's not necessarily true at all. And so we have to get beyond that and stop putting ourselves in that box. Imagine just the simple things that we can do for the holiday. For me, you know, having my family around, having my children around, and now my grandkids around, man, that's priceless. That is a gift. That is a gift to me. You know, my gift is watching them open their gifts. You know, my gift is the fact of their smiles. My gift is the fact of being able to look over three generations and go, man, isn't this wonderful? And so we have to find other ways to do so. But by the same token, you know, I think it's important that people also recognize the signs and the signs of what mental illness look like. Because sometimes, you know, people just, they all right. They're just in one of their moods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little deeper than that, right? So when we start talking about mental illness, five warning signs of that is really what we call long-lasting sadness or irritability. Everyone gets sad. Everyone has that time of being sad. But is it long-lasting sadness or irritability? And if it is, where did it stem from? What was the trigger? What was the catalyst for it?
And it's a lot of us have experienced that in the last few months, that long, prolonged sadness because of, like I said, where they find themselves in life right now. But I think what individuals really need to look at right now is one of the things that this pandemic has done has leveled the playing field for all of us. We're all rebuilding. I don't care how much money you had, you don't have it anymore. So everybody's trying to claw their way back and get their footing back. So it has leveled the playing field. So no one should feel inadequate of the things they don't have because we've all suffered losses, you know, physical losses, like I said, financial. And it's we're at the same playing field. I went to the store yesterday to pick up some toys, you know, to donate. And I was blown away at the prices of some of this stuff. I was like, what in the world? And, you know, for the last few years, during the holiday times, you know, I had stopped giving toys and giving gift cards, $50, $100, $150, $200 gift cards to families to help them. And I'm like thinking, when I was in the store, I was like, oh, this is not enough. The gift cards that I give is not enough because the things are so high. But then I thought to myself, I said, you know, looking at those people that lost their homes last week with the tornado, it was, I mean, here we are in the middle of a season that everything's supposed to be merry, everything's supposed to be bright. They've lost everything. So we're in a season where we really, really need to be thankful for those things we do have and stop looking at what we don't have.
And I think you're thankful, right? Because the whole thing about being thankful is being appreciative for what you have, what has been given. The whole thing about being unthankful is oftentimes we're so busy complaining about what we don't have and we don't celebrate that which we do have. And so that's oftentimes fueled by you know, what I call false propaganda. You know, one of the dangers of social media is that people can become whoever they want you to believe that they are. And so they you know, they put the right pictures up, they show you the right thing, and it looks great. I'm not indicting people who does that, but it's so important that you, the individual that may be watching it, don't go measuring yourself based upon what you're seeing someone else do. So I said to one person, I said, did you realize that that footage was from 2 years ago? That's not their situation now. You know, and so we have to understand when we see those type of things there that we don't nurture those type of things. The other thing that we have to understand is the fact that one of the signs of mental illnesses is when we see extremely very high and very low mood swings. Okay, so excessive high, very extremely high, always on a high, always on a high, because look for the crash.
Right.
Or the very low. And so those are signs, once again, the mental illnesses that are setting in there. And then we have to look at the fact that beyond that, you know, person who's living in excessive fear and worry, anxiety, always on the edge about things like that. What is happening? Mind has been overworked. It's been overworked. They're being preoccupied. They're being flooded with faults. Oftentimes, faults that leads to fear. Faults that leads to I can't. Faults that leads to I don't know if I can do that. So those faults there are generally excessive, and people start acting out, and we start seeing things happen. And the thing that we cannot afford to do is just walk by like nothing is happening. These are the time that you want to seek help. These are the time that you want to have someone to talk to, you know, a therapist, a, you know, some type of session, therapeutic session, you know, and for all of our spiritual, religious colleagues and things, I'm not saying don't come to you, don't come to us. But if we're not equipped to deal with it, then we need to find some way to do so. I've discovered there are a lot of people that are good preachers, but they don't make good counselors.
Right.
They don't,
I'm so glad you brought that up, Dr. J, because, yes. You know, if the pastors and leadership was all that, we wouldn't have a lot of things going on that are going on in the homes. And I think that especially in the Christian community, they feel they demonize getting counseling.
Yeah.
You know, they are like, you know, ain't nothing wrong with you. They want to pray and fast it out. But some things you need special individuals, special doctors that deal with mental health to deal with these situations and things. Some things you just cannot pray out. You know, when a child is born artistically, you kind of know something is wrong during that first year of their growth and things. And then the more they mature and grow, you take them to a specialist and you find out that they're artistic and you can deal with that. Other times individuals don't know something is mentally challenging a child until they're about 14. And then when they're 24, it's escalated because they didn't see it while they were maturing during those adolescent years. And now they're adults and then they can't cope with life. And that's why you have so many teens that are drinking and smoking. They're trying to drown out the noises. And we need to be aware of these type signs and stuff. So, you know, I'm in ministry. So, you know, I believe in prayer, but some things you have to get specialists to deal with. You need to be able to communicate because there's individuals that will communicate with a specialist, but won't communicate with you as a minister because of the fact that they feel that your expectations of them are higher. So they don't want to expose their true selves and then have you looking at them crossways, or they're afraid that you may mention them in a sermon. So they're not going to unleash, unzip that cloak and show you their authentic self because of the fact that they don't want to be hurt further or exposed when they're trying to get help.
You said a welcome, and this is one of the things that we generally speak to the faith community about, is that when you have unlofty and unrealistic expectations of people, it is no different than when we deal with the church and domestic violence. Oftentimes, what makes a victim hesitant from ever going to their faith leader is because the faith leader, we have demonstrated this unrealistic picture of what marriage and what family looks like. So we have a marriage that looks like the, you know, Ward and June Cleaver from Leaving the Beaver, and everything's together and everything is perfect, and we love God, and so we pray all the time, all that, but that's not the reality that people are living in. And so because of the fact you painted this lofty picture there, people are already embarrassed that they've fallen short of it. So they have not met the expectation not only of you, but in their mind, they have not met the expectation of God. And so guess what? Why would I be open with you? Because the fact it's already been deemed that anything less than that picture is imperfect. Anything less than that picture is, you know, is short of the mark. So why would I open up to you? However, if I know that I could come to you and you're non-judgmental, I know that I can come to you and I can be transparent, then I'm more likely to be so. But I don't need it to be part of the, you know, the 9 a.m., you know, gossip page, or, you know, it's the title of my next sermon, or it's interwoven into my next message. No. To be able to be trusted, the Bible says, if we want to go that route, is that there is what? There is safety in a multitude of counsel. Okay.
It says, and notice it said multitude. So different, diverse counsel.
Diversity. And I recognize that. So we're at a stage that if the truth be told, that literally the clergy and the therapist ought to be able to work together. They ought to be able to work together. Why do you say that? So understand the fact that we are triune beings. We are a spirit, and we're fed spiritually from the word. But we have a soul, which is our mind, our emotions, and we live in a body, which is our physical shell. So I tell people all the time, you may enjoy my messages, and that's great. I'm glad you're inspired by them. I'm glad you're delivered by them. I'm glad of all those things. But don't you call me to perform your open heart surgery, because that's not my expertise. Mm-hmm. That's not where I've been gifted, anointed, or schooled in. And so I have a respect of the fact that, listen, you come telling me that you have heart issues and you got all these things going in large heart. I'm not going to tell you, well, listen, forget about what the doctor said and stuff like that. You know, I'm just going to pray that your heart, I'm going to pray and I'm going to believe. Yes, I am. But I'm not going to tell you, number one, stop taking medication. Number two, I'm not going to tell you that, you know, to disregard what's being said, because I don't have the expertise to do so. I don't. So why put your physical life in danger, because I'm just so full of myself, or I feel that I have to be the person who's the authority in every area of your life? No, I'm not. And I give the perfect example, Dr. Val. Think about this. Luke was a physician, and yet still he was one of the disciples. Nowhere did Jesus look at him and said, Luke, your days are over. We don't need you. Watch me work. No. Yeah. Because there would still be a need. And then he reemphasized it by saying, listen, he said, it's not those that are well that need a physician. It is those that are sick. Notice he didn't say, it's not those that are well that need a physician, but, you know, those that are sick just need me. No, because there is a place for that. And we need to understand that with mental health is a real issue. It needs treatment at times. All treatment is not necessarily where, you know, you got to have psychotropic drugs. It's not always that. But sometimes it's the right therapeutic plan. Sometimes it's the right intervention. It's sometimes, you know, we have this thing that we call trauma-informed care. Now, that sounds like a lot of big words, but understand, we live a life filled with trauma in our neighborhoods. I just spoke with someone earlier today, and although I had heard on the news last week that a 16-year-old young girl was killed by a stray bullet in the midst of other folks' shenanigans and foolishness. And this was her great niece. I just discovered, although I heard the news, I found tonight that that was her great niece that was killed inside of that. That impact has impacted not only her family, her classmates at Palm Beach Lakes High School. It's impacted everyone that knew her. We're talking about trauma. We're talking about those type of life-stressing events that is totally out of our norm, that threatens our sense of reality. And so what do we say to that? It exists. We have to address it. And when people live years and years with uninformed trauma, unaddressed trauma, that stuff just continued to pile up, and we see it play itself out. And sometimes it's played out in very, if you would, in very dangerous ways, very unedifying ways, very unhealthy ways. And we have to be willing to deal with that. But what we can do, we can listen, we can embrace, we can love, we can offer support, and we can refer. I tell people all the time, listen, no one is asking you to be, no one is asking you to be the expert in everything, but at least we ought to be a good referral agent, you know, a good, you know, triage nurse, assess the situation and refer.
The bottom line is we need to ask for help and keep asking until we get it. Just because we go to one psych therapist or psychiatrist to help us to transition, rather it be with drugs or counseling, that if we're not satisfied with the results, we can go to someone else. You don't have to stick to that person because it's that person's opinion. Just like a medical doctor, they're giving you medication based on what they think you should have, but your body is different. Everybody's body is different and it reacts to different medications in a different way. So it's the same thing when you're trying to get mental health. And, you know, growing up, when you hear about somebody crazy, you would see on television where they'd have the thing like Herman the Monster, where they had those bolts on your head and they think of putting the hat on your head and they electrocuting you, shocking you back into places. Yeah, it used to happen a lot. They used to, Creedmoor Hospital there in New York, mental health thing. It's like, okay, they get ready to go to Creedmoor. They acted up. It's like they all took everybody and put them in a box. But because we've been enlightened to the different capacities of mental illness and the different departments to separate people and not put them all in a box, it is greater help, better help. And if you're prescribed medications, you know, one of the things I know about individuals that are on medications for mental illness is the first thing they say is, I don't like the way it makes me feel. I'm not going to take it because it makes me feel loopy. So you got to communicate that to the doctor, that this is the way it makes me feel. And then a lot of people, you know, they don't even take the medication. They take municipal drugs, you know, because it makes them feel better. They're more coherent and made and able to work better because they have the municipal drugs as opposed, which is legal in many states to take, as opposed to take the medications that they give, because they have so many different things in. And like I said, it does affect individuals' bodies differently. And I'm talking candidly. Let's like just be a, this is hot topics from the soul. There's different aspects of help that you can get. So I want people to be aware of the different things that they can do to get help. There's it is medical doctor and there's holistic doctors that you can go to. Just like there's an array of different ministers and pastors that you can go to for help. So there's help out there, and I want individuals to seek after it. There is a National Mental Illness Hotline that is 1-800-950-6264. That's 1-800-950-6264. It's 24 hours. If you feel that you're getting ready to have a psychotic break and you just can't hold it together, or you want to talk to somebody anonymously, call that number and they will direct you where you should go. But don't keep things bottled up inside of you. Don't allow yourself to be isolated, because isolation is so dangerous. And you know, that boogeyman, that inner me inside, that enemy, it will always tell you that you're less than what you are, but you are not. You're greater than you even imagine you could be. Just give yourself the opportunity to prove. You know how many people have fallen and failed their way and then wind up building mega businesses and, you know, financial empires and finding that love of their life because they kept it together. They kept focused, regardless of what it looked like, regardless of what they were feeling at the time. They kept it moving. And that's what I'm encouraging you to do tonight. If you're in a place where you feel that you can't pull it together, there is an 800 hotline that you can call, which is 800-950-6264. And you reach out for help and don't stop until you get it. You have the power to change your life for the better. Don't check out.
You're exactly right now. Because of fact, once again, that 24-hour hotline, you're talking to a stranger, the person you don't know. You don't have to put on a facade.
Right.
You don't have to live up. You don't have to live up to an image, whether or not it's an image you built or an image that was built as a result of what you do. But what we do know is that if you don't get help, the image that you think you have will shatter. Because at the end of the day, the weight of what you're carrying oftentimes is too great for any one person. And so you need to understand being able to reach out to get help. That doesn't make you weak. That actually makes you strong. You are strong enough to be cognizant enough to recognize that I'm not myself. This is overwhelming. This here is crushing me. These repetitive thoughts are continuously torturing me. I'm going to get help. Help is something good that we all need. Because at the end of the day, we don't want to forfeit the ultimate, meaning what our future is, for the immediate. And the immediate situation you're facing, the immediate shortage that you're going through, the immediate pain that you're going through. You know, it's interesting because we have to understand things are really temporal in our life. There's nothing that is permanent. Mm-hmm. Seasons change. I mean, leaves change on the trees. Things change. So we understand that change in of itself is inevitable. I've got to be in a place to be able to be ready simply to make the shift and weather the changes that are happening in my life. And when I cannot do that in and of myself, then I do need to reach for help. I do need support. And I say to people, do not stigmatize people that are going through mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. The truth be told, all of us at some point
are
overwhelmed with mental challenges that is there. Everybody don't end up on medication. And then there are those who end up on medication that are not on it permanently. And so there are things that has to be treated. But to go in silent and to ignore it as if it doesn't exist, you've guaranteed yourself an appointment that you will. You will. Because you need the intervention. You need the things there. Brain chemistry has a lot to do with a lot of things. So when we take it on ourselves personally, as if we did something to cause ourselves to have mental illness, not necessarily. Right. So once again, genetics, you had nothing to do with that. Has nothing to do with that. We start talking about how these things play themselves out. But what I will say to you is this, is that we owe it to one another. I owe it to you to give you a soft place to land. I owe it to you to say, look here, yeah, you can talk to me. I've had a person say, God, I'm going to sound crazy, but don't judge me. I can appreciate that. Although I don't prefer them using the word crazy, but I know what they're saying is that I'm going to sound like I'm all over the place, but hear me out. And you know why they're all over the place? Because they're all over the place. They're all over the place in their thought process. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place in trying to access the experience that they've just had. They're all over the place trying to access the events that have happened in their lives. And so there are many reasons why we may go into depression. We can look at a very limited part of our lives and we can magnify it. And we start using terms like, man, I can't do nothing right. Or things always go so bad for me. Man, look like everybody can get it right but me. Those are self-talk that we continue to keep undergirding it. We keep enforcing it. We keep nurturing it. And I often say, whatever we nurture, that's what grows. Mm-hmm. If we nurture negativity, it grows. Now, anything that grows will eventually produce a fruit to it. So when you start talking about frustration and anxiety, you start talking about mood swings, you start talking about things that may lead to other things like eating disorders.
Yeah, a lot of individuals, they eat and that's why they're overweight. You know, it's
Exactly.
not because they were born that way because of their family genetics. It's because they're depressed. I remember, Dr. J, when my children were young, that I went through such a depression because I was in the midst of domestic violence and I was mentally abused as well as physically, day in and day out. And I just couldn't pull myself together. And then finally, one day I woke up and I began to have panic attacks. Anytime I went outside the door or I was taking the kids to school and stuff, I would just be shaking, just be shaking. I would have anxiety attacks. I mean, all of this going on, I was just, and when I looked around, it was like everything was caving in on me. And by time I got back to the house, I was drenched. It was as though I was caught in the rain. That panic attack was so great and so massive. And then I went to the doctor about it, and they were like, well, they put me on some Xanax. And I took the Xanax, they gave me a strength, and I took it. And it would make me feel like loopy, sleepy all the time. I have four kids. I couldn't afford to be like loopy and not be able to tend to their needs. They called me, they're like, Mom, Mom. And I'm like I was like really on drugs. So I took it upon myself to break it in half. And then I took it and then I started praying and reading God's word. And asking God to help me get through this process because I knew it was unnatural. I knew it was unnatural. And even when I was going through the domestic violence, I didn't understand what I was going through because I never experienced or saw it, so I didn't know what it was. So that anxiety impiled on that, and I wind up having it lasted for about 3 months. I went through that situation until God gave me a breakthrough. But I'm saying this to say that it can happen to any one of us. Anybody can experience a mental illness or go into a mental breakdown because of life. Life has taken a beating on many of us, but as I said, you can pull yourself up out of it, but you have to allow God to help you. You can't do it by yourself. And there are people that are qualified to help you come out of it physically, but you have to be transparent and say what's on your heart and say what's in your mind, because a lot of times where the battlefield is in the mind. The battlefield is in a mind. I kept saying, oh, the world is caving in and I'm not going outside. And there are people that are stuck in that place for years where they don't go outside and they wind up having these eating disorders and gaining all this weight and wind up being on TV talking about my 600-pound life is because life caved in and there was nobody to pull them out and they didn't even know how to get out.
You said some very important things there, because when we look at being kind of stuck in that type of rut mentally, we rehearse it, and then that abnormality becomes our norm. But what we have to understand, and that's a perfect example, when the mind is weighed down, the body will react. When the mind is weighed down and is stressed like that, the body will react. We will start feeling it. Our body will start adapting to it. We started taking in things. Our body started exemplifying certain symptoms and things like that. And then sometime we find out that it begins when we start having psychosomatic type events where, guess what? We are feeling it and all those things there. But when we go to a doctor, a physical doctor, they can't find what you're saying. And so they say, well, it's psychosomatic. Well, it's happening here. And so the thing about it is this, is that we don't want you to be stigmatized by stigmas. And that's part of the reason why people remain silent, because the stigma that comes along with not feeling up to par, not
Right, they'd
being
be like,
yourself.
oh, you know, she's crazy. Did you hear what she said? You see what she's doing? And yeah, they put you in a box and won't allow you to get out.
But we have work to do in making sure that people are liberated. that people are not stuck inside of this box. And see, the reality is that we all experience different mood swings. We experience different time. When I'm sad, I'm sad. When I'm happy, I'm happy. You know, one of the first little songs we learned growing up in preschool was, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hand, right? And that's what we learned. But then they told us, if you're happy and you know it, then your face will surely show up. And the problem is that we often grow out of that part of it.
Mm.
We grow out of that part there. Because there are times when we get older, we learn to put a smile on this face, but yet it's still, we are bleeding inside. We learn to give that, what I call that facade, that we're okay, but in all actuality, we're not. And so there are those who will hide what they're going through. There are those who will pretend as if everything is all right when it isn't. There are those who will suffer in silence because they've told themselves, well, I shouldn't be feeling this way, or I'm not supposed to feel this way. And so here's the thing, I agree with that part. But what you are in is in denial. You're in denial. And as long as you're in denial, you cannot attend to what's going on with you. As long as you're in denial, you cannot address what you're going on. So it goes back once again to being able to change that. And you can only change what you confront. And if you don't confront it, then guess what? You'll never identify it. So all these things are there. And we have to just be careful, you know, be mindful during the holiday season. Look around you. You know, think about that person. Check on your strong friends, the one that you think that are always strong and got together. Check on them, because oftentimes they are the ones that are really of just being weighed down and basically being crushed by life expectations, by perceptions and those type things there. And if you're worth your salt, and I'll say this anyway, I hope it liberates you. Even the therapist needs a therapist.
Yes.
And most of my therapist friends have therapists. And so as a clergy, it is no demotion or it's no slight on God that I might need to go get help, that I might need help in processing things. I might need help in doing what we call unpacking, because that's what it's really about. Do we take time to unpack things in our lives? Unpack events that's happened in our life, unpack the traumas that are there, or do we just hinge on the fact, well, I'm a Virginia child, ain't that gonna stop me, I'm gonna keep on going. Well, nothing stops you while you keep on going. The problem is that you will slow down at some point. And when you do slow down and all of a sudden these things come rushing in on you and you feel overwhelmed, that's where you'll encounter your biggest problem. But if along the way, I have the assistance of being able to unpack my events, unpack what I've gone through, unpack those life events, unpack it and deal with it so that I'm not bitter, but I'm better to deal with it. So that as a result that I'm stronger, you know, that I am wiser. I did learn from what I went through. That's the goal where we want to be at inside of that. So celebrate. When you celebrate, celebrate those that seem like they're not happy. Celebrate those that are there. It's nothing else. Look at everyone and just tell everyone, I appreciate you being in my life. You are important to me. You're important.
Not only that, Dr. J, those of you that know that you have individuals that you know personally that have lost a loved one or has suffered some type of loss, not maybe by death, but have suffered some type of loss, check on them. This holiday is going to be rough. Check on them. Call them and say hello, or invite them over for dinner. Take them some food if you don't want them in your home, because we're still in a pandemic. But check on people. I'm sure they will be glad to hear you. Even if you don't get them, leave a voice message and say, I'm thinking about you. Happy holidays. So that when they do come out of the cloud, they'll know that you're there waiting for them. So reach out and help someone this holiday season. That's the greatest gift you can give, is love.
I think you hit it on the head. And at the end of the day, people need to feel that. They need to feel that they are affirmed. And the thing I discovered, Dr. Val, is that sometimes the higher you are, meaning the fact in being needed, you need a different type of affirmation. Because I do know, as a person who served people and served so often, there are times that I simply need to know that I'm loved, that I care, or just I really appreciate you for being there.
Yeah, we know a lot of people. We do. I know a lot of people, but you know, sometimes I get in those moods where, you know, it's like, am I really helping anybody? You know, I do these shows and stuff. Are people actually getting information? Is it empowering, inspiring individuals? This is what I wanted to do. And, you know, should I go on? Because you sometimes we don't get any responses. We don't get any support. But I feel the draw to help, even if it's one person, help transform their lives so that they'll know that they're worth it.
And absolutely. And so I make that statement to encourage people, to encourage to check on once again, even your strong friends. Encourage, let them know that you see them and let them know that, listen, I know that this has got to be very demanding on you, but you wear it well. Appreciate you for being there. You know, your words keep me going, you know, or whatever. There's a need to be needed by all of us. And that is so very important. So I want to say to each and every one that's listening out there, even during these holiday seasons, I don't want you to focus on what you don't have. Focus on what you do have. And I want you to know from tonight that you have people that do care, that do love you, and do think that your life is worth living. You have value. Live to that value. You can do it. Make up your mind. Stop focusing on your limitations. Because if you focus on your limitations long enough, you just might get them. You will acquiesce to your limitations. But I dare you to begin to look toward what's inside of you and begin to move toward it. You have more value than you realize, but you got to activate it. Listen, because at the end of the day, if your presence don't make a difference, your absence won't either. So live to make your presence make a difference. Understand that you do make a difference. Your smile that you keep withholding from people because you're isolated, you're withholding somebody else joy. There's more to you than you're allowing the world to see. And you need to come from out of the isolation, come from out of the darkness, and begin to let your light shine.
It's been said that our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're more powerful beyond measure. This has been another Hot Topics from the Soul. I don't want to encourage you to subscribe to Hot Topics from the Soul YouTube. We need you to support us and also the show tonight. Share it on your Facebook page because you may not know that somebody needs this. So if you could spread the word to encourage individuals, share this on your page to empower and inspire someone through this holiday season and beyond. It's just not this time because people suffer anxiety every single day. I went through it over a period in my life, and I'm sure other individuals are going through and don't understand what it is. So I encourage you to share this page and also make note of this National Mental Illness Hotline. Once again, it's 1-800-950-6264. And I also want to encourage you to visit Dr. J's website, www.jrthicklin.com. That's JRTHICKLIN.com, so that you can find out more about the work that he's doing in the community 24/7. It doesn't just limitate to 1 month. We do it every day of our lives. We're working in the vineyard. And also visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Good night, God bless, and happy holidays to you.
God bless.